From KCRW in Santa Monica, I'm Claude Brodesser-Ackner, and this is The Business.
It's not that easy being green.
This week on The Business, it's not that easy being green if you're a Hollywood studio. We talked to Shelley Billick, the VP of Environmental Initiatives at Warner Brothers Entertainment. She spent the last 16 years explaining to the industry that recycling vintage Halston doesn't make you an environmentalist. But first, it's the Hollywood News Caravan. Go nowhere, it's The Business from NPR.
It seems you blend in with so many other ordinary things. And people tend to pass you over because you're not standing out like flashy sparkles.
Director Kevin Smith has won an appeal to give his new film, Zack and Miri Make a Porno, an R rating. The Motion Picture Association of America ratings board had branded it with the dreaded NC-17, but last week they announced that its appeals panel had screened the film and revised the rating. Said Smith, quote, "They felt it was rather sexually graphic. My point is, it was comically graphic. It wasn't designed to titillate," end quote. Of course, it's not just the movies that seem to be pushing sexual boundaries. A new report from the Parents Television Council noted a rise in sexually taboo behavior on TV, including threesomes, partner swapping, pedophilia, necrophilia, bestiality, prostitution, masturbation, pornography, sex toys, and, of course, fetishes. But perhaps the more interesting finding in the report is that the boob tube doesn't show enough married boob. Per the report, when marital sex is portrayed on TV, it is, quote, non-existent or burdensome, end quote, and that scenes portraying unmarried sex outnumber similar scenes between married couples by nearly 4-1. Well, of course married sex on TV is dull compared to all that fantastic pedophilia, necrophilia, bestiality, and fetishism. Duh. In a decidedly less lascivious study, it turns out that Hollywood may not be as recession-proof as it likes to think. A new report from the Los Angeles media and market research firm Interpret LLC surveyed about 1,000 U.S. consumers aged 18 to 54. What it found out was that more than half of them said they were seeing fewer movies at the multiplex. But how does that jibe with Variety's recent report that the film business has a real shot at scoring its second consecutive record-breaking summer domestically? Well, summer grosses are slightly ahead of last year, but attendance is down. In other words, more people are going to the movies, but less often. The lesson is painfully obvious for Hollywood, but worth stating anyway. Tinseltown can be recession-proof, as long as it makes films that people really do want to go see. Finally, in response to criticism from disability rights advocates, DreamWorks Pictures has taken down a website aimed at promoting its new comedy, Tropic Thunder. The site, simplejackmovie.com, featured a poster of Ben Stiller as Tropic Thunder fictional action star Tug Speedman in a fictional film called Simple Jack, which has the tagline, "Once upon a time, there was a retard." A consortium of groups, including the Special Olympics and the Down Syndrome Association of Los Angeles, had objected to the site. But they may have missed the point. Follow me here. The site is about a fictitious actor known best for his role in a fictitious drama about a mentally challenged person. It wasn't intended to be insensitive to the disabled, but just the opposite. It's a satirical poke at Hollywood actors' callow willingness to play disabled characters in search of awards. Think Dustin Hoffman in Rain Man, Sean Penn in I Am Sam, or Matthew McConaughey in Failure to Launch. And that's the Hollywood News Caravan. Coming up next, Hollywood says, "You'll get this Fiji water bottle when you pry it from my cold, dead hands." Hollywood is chock full of rabid hybrid drivers, organic cotton wearers, and shade-grown latte sippers. In fact, you'd be hard-pressed to find a greener group of people anywhere than the folks who work in the business. And yet, Hollywood's inhabitants are equally known for their materialism and excess. This contradiction is no more apparent than when you look at Hollywood production. The greenest people on the planet seem to toss their environmental ideals into the storm drain under the unique time and money pressures of making TV shows and films. Even before a movie goes before the cameras, the damage begins. The average big-budget film pumps out more than 800,000 pages of script rewrites and production changes. That's according to Amy Lemish, the director of the California Film Commission. And a Hollywood film production can belch out more than 2,000 tons of carbon into the atmosphere. To put that in context for you, that's what 219 Cadillac Escalades flatulate in a year. In fact, a University of California study into the environmental impact of filmmaking in Hollywood found, relative to its size, production polluted more in the Los Angeles area alone than the aerospace, apparel, or hotel industries statewide. Only California's petroleum refineries pollute more. And that's before you add in the forests of lumber and the oceans of paint expended on sets built only to be torn down and thrown away. But lest you think the studios are doing nothing about this, it's important to note that last year, the majors diverted 57%, or 20,000 tons, of studio sets and other solid waste away from landfills for reuse and recycling. Which is another way of saying we only throw away 43% of everything we make in Hollywood. We thought we'd take a look at the special obstacles to going green faced by the business with Shelley Billick, the VP of Environmental Initiatives at Warner Brothers Entertainment. She started there 16 years ago as the company's recycling manager, and they hired her largely as a result of California's then-new waste reduction laws. Walking around and trying to get workmen on the Warner's lot to be more environmentally conscious, she quickly earned the nickname Hug-a-Tree, or just Huggy.
Initially, it was difficult, depending on who I was talking to. But for the most part, the folks in the back lot really didn't want to hear about taking more time to deconstruct a set or having to separate materials. As you can imagine, in Hollywood, everything is really driven by a very tight schedule, tight budgets. You really need to keep moving. And I was pretty much a disruption to the way that they were used to doing their business.
Has it changed today, or do they still see you as the Sith-wielding, black-hooded specter of delays and annoyance?
Hopefully no one ever saw me quite that, dramatically. But it has changed over the years, and not only because the awareness has really flourished, but I think that over the years, many of the departments in the studio and the other corporate departments saw that this is a company commitment, that it wasn't the flavor of the month, it wasn't going away, it wasn't a fad, that the company really committed to having an environmental initiatives department, a budget, staff, ongoing policies. So I think it evolved over the years.
So what's unique about making TV shows or movies that makes being green so different from if you were just making Toyotas or beer?
It's actually much more challenging than if you had a widget, a product that you were manufacturing over and over again with the same characteristics, and you could sort of fine-tune that process. Just by nature, television production, film production especially, each film is completely different. You have a whole city of people, and often in many different locations. The inputs are different. The materials are different. So that's challenging. On the other hand, it's a fantastic opportunity to say, let's change the habits of all of these people, and let's even start changing the mindset within the industry, whether it's in transportation or construction or electric or makeup and hair. So you start sort
Give me some examples.
Well, one of the very early programs that we embarked on is to use reusable steel scaffolding for platforms instead of building them from wood. And it might seem like a no-brainer. You're using metal, which is recyclable, reusable, instead of these wood platforms. But you're using two different unions. So the labor dynamics are, that changes everything. And you have to have storage. But once you start integrating that, and not every production does it. It depends on whether they need to cut holes or how high the platform is. But once you start doing that, you realize, wait a minute. There's a whole new perspective here to something as simple as a platform that saves you on materials, disposal, and labor.
In the handbook you wrote for Warner Brothers, I'm going to read something here to you, and I'm hoping you can sort of, elucidate what the solutions are. It says, much of the waste generated by film and TV production results from the disposal of set materials. What do you do about that? I mean, you're basically creating, new worlds every time you shoot something. What can you do?
In the television world, many of the shows actually reuse sets. They can change the look, and they catalog them and exchange them amongst the shows. In features, it's a little bit trickier, but there is a lot of good base material, just 2x4s and plywood and that sort of thing. Often we can donate a lot of those materials to nonprofit groups, to small theater groups, to schools. We have a whole reuse program called Encore, a community reuse partnership, and we really try and find new homes for all of these materials. The rest that can't be donated is recycled. So wood, you know, wood sets that can't be donated can be ground up. Some of it goes to what's called cogen, which is in essence energy generation, and some of it gets composted. And we try to send as very, you know, as little as possible to the landfill. From what we call stage waste, we can probably recycle anywhere from 80 to 90% of all of those materials.
I'd like to have you sort of paint a picture of what you're up against in terms of both attitudes and pressure.
Yeah.
Do people say to you, Shelley, look, that's sweet. That's nice. You want to save the penguins. Okay. We are $4 million over budget. We have a crazy director who's shooting 10 million feet of film, and we got to get this done. Mm-hmm. We need to get it done now. Okay. So go away.
There is less of that. There used to be a lot more of that. I think that more and more people understand that this is not just a nice thing to do to save the spotted owl somewhere else, especially when we're talking about energy use and the impact on air pollution, the impact on climate change. There is definitely an understanding that, hey, our very survival depends on how quickly we mobilize to address climate change. And you might think, and some people do think, well, what does that have to do with me? I'm a producer. I'm just making a show. But the bottom line is that every single one of us has an impact on the environment, on natural resources, on our own health. And especially if you have a position of some authority and some impact, meaning if you're in a position that has influence, then you can really take advantage of that and say, okay, no idling the trucks to reduce fuel consumption and reduce air pollution. How about let's close all the stage doors while the air conditioning is on? How about let's reduce the time that we pre-light a set? And you find those points where it does make a difference.
If you're just joining us, I'm speaking with Shelley Billick, the VP of Environmental Initiatives at Warner Brothers Entertainment. We're talking about environmentalism in a town that sees no irony in flying by private jet to a conference on sustainable living. And you know who you are. Kate Walsh of Grey's Anatomy. I want to seize on something you said. You said if you're a person of influence.
Yes.
So if a big-name star or a director is sort of a noted environmentalist or is at least into being green on this project, what can you accomplish that otherwise would be tough or impossible?
It absolutely opens the door. It just sends a message throughout the whole production that this is an important value. It's a value of this group of people who are basically tied at the hip for however long, that it should be done across the board. So I'll give you an example. We have a show called The Closer, and Kira Sedgwick is a known environmentalist, and she, from the beginning of the show, said, we need to make sure that everything about our production is green. The producer on the show, Andy Sachs, has fully embraced it, and I think they were on the same page from the beginning. And it was just so much easier to talk about biodiesel, to talk about virtual office, to eliminate water bottle usage on the set. They used the water thermoses that we provided. And you just leapfrog all of the resistance and all of the litany of reasons why people say something is harder, why double-sided scripts are harder to deal with, or you know, why someone can't carry a reusable thermos. That just goes out the window. So between the producer and Kira, they completely opened the door for us.
I remember a few years back, and admittedly this is a couple years back, but there was a project at Sony called The Double. It was supposed to be a John Travolta movie, and it ultimately got shelved for all kinds of reasons owing to craziness and budget. But one of the stipulations that Travolta insisted on to Sony was that they lease back his jet from him and that they keep it fueled and running on the tarmac at De Gaulle 24/7 for him to fly home to Miami or Florida, wherever he was at. He's also a pilot. And the carbon footprint of that production, which never – this is a movie that was never even made, must have been staggering to have a 747 sitting on a runway 24 hours a day. And this kind of stuff, I'm sure I'm not crazy to think that this happens all the time, where some star says, well, I want to be able to go home and see my kid, and I don't care if I am in Kuala Lumpur, you know? And then the studio kind of has to say, all right, well, we'll send the Warner's jet and get to some, you know. So anything you're doing with double-sided scripts goes completely out the window, right?
I mean, yes,
you can admit that, right?
Absolutely, absolutely. But you have to find – these are little pebbles in the pond. When you can say recycling doesn't matter or double-sided scripts don't matter if you have a private jet. But the point is that once you find that trigger – that touches a person on the production, that makes them think about their daily behaviors that have impacts, then they start changing their mindset. They start changing their value system. And so one thing will lead to another. And the next time that they see that truck idling, they're going to say, that can't be good.
I want to ask you if you've noticed if you can be contemplative about this for a second and say, the attitude, what about the attitudes in Hollywood makes your job harder? For instance, I'm thinking, you know, Hollywood is known as this place for being very liberal, sort of tree-hugging, Prius-driving. But there seems to be a disconnect between personal and professional practices.
Traditionally, the culture of Hollywood has been about excess, luxury. And I think that now some people are starting to redefine what it is to have luxury. And if luxury means cleaner air, I live in a place where I can drink the water, where I can eat the food and not be poisoned, there's a different definition. So abundance is not about stuff. Abundance is time, time with family, time to be outdoors, to have some contact with nature. I don't think this is a, you know, majority thinking here. I think I'm still probably in the minority. But I think more and more we're realizing that material excess isn't really getting us to where we want to be. It's hard to address the jets. I mean, some people, are you going to tell, you know, Brad Pitt that he can't travel in a private jet? No, he's going to be accosted everywhere. So it's unrealistic to say you have to lower your footprint by not traveling in a jet. Instead, he can do much more important things like spend his money on organizations that change public policy.
Coming up after a short break, more with Shelley Billick, the VP of Environmental Initiatives at Warner Brothers Entertainment. You're listening to The Business from NPR. You're listening to The Business, and I'm Claude Brodesser-Ackner. The corporate parents of the studios are finally getting eco-religion big time. Perhaps most notably, News Corporation has touted that they will become entirely carbon neutral by 2010. Given the proclivity for tree-hugging in Hollywood, you'd think that the studios would be leading the conglomerates that own them in the eco area. You would be wrong. But they are making progress. The studios diverted 57%, or 20,000 tons, of studio sets and other solid waste from landfills to reuse and recycle. Which is another way of saying we only throw away 43% of everything we make in Hollywood. It seems the greenest people on the planet toss their environmental ideals into the storm drain under the unique time and money pressures of making TV shows and movies. We're talking to Shelley Billick, the VP of Environmental Initiatives at Warner Brothers Entertainment. Now, let's talk about how technology is making it easier or harder for the studios to go green. I understand that filming in high def, for example, means having to have a set look absolutely pristine, whereas you could fake it more with, you know, regular definition production.
Well, on one hand, on the HD side, I do know that it requires a lot more lighting, for example, so the energy use is much higher. But we're never going to undo that. You know, once you see something in high def, you say, wow, that's not going to go away. On the other hand, digital distribution has really reduced the number of hard prints that we have to make and the delivery of those prints. So
I think what a lot of people don't fully appreciate is when a blockbuster comes out, how many cans of film have to go out into the world, and they're incredibly heavy, and they go out on trucks and then often on planes. And digital distribution really could change that.
Frankly, we don't really know yet what the statistics are on sort of the balance sheet, the environmental balance sheet. I'm sure that also as more people have digital TVs, as the regulations go into effect, they're going to throw out their old TV and there's going to be a lot more electronic scrap. So I think there are, you know, probably benefits and detriments.
What kind of pressure is on you from the sort of the corporate higher-ups? What don't they understand about production, perhaps, that would make some of the requests you might get tough to or impossible to carry out?
First, I have to say that luckily I work for a company that has been committed to environmental stewardship for many, many years. And so it's not a recent mandate. It has been integrated into the company values over a long time. And so generally, we don't get the word from on high, you know, without a conversation, without a dialogue. And secondly, I think that the whole notion of climate neutral, if you really think about it, it's kind of the old reduce, reuse, recycle adage. You have to start with the reduce part. It doesn't make sense to buy a bunch of carbon offsets and make yourself carbon neutral. What you really need to do is assess your environmental footprint and figure out how you can reduce that. Then you look at more of the reuse equivalent would be like renewable energy. What can we do with solar? We already have the first solar project in the industry, and we're about to expand that.
Talk about that, if you would.
The solar project is a perfect example where our company decided to invest, at the time it was 2 years ago, in a 72-kilowatt system. It's not a huge system, but it was
the
first.
I wouldn't know a kilowatt if it bit me on the nose. So how much
it's
is 72?
It's enough to power about 20 average-size homes for the life of the system, which is 30 years plus.
Can Hollywood lead on this topic?
Yes, I think.
Rather than waiting for the change to sort of filter down to us.
I think that's already happening. I mean, Hollywood is very influential, not only in the sense of being influential on electeds, et cetera, but it's also influential on public consciousness. Hollywood has the opportunity to shift culture and to make it cool and to make it fun and to say, hey, it's time to change our ways and look at renewable energy and create green jobs and reduce the amount of waste that we generate, et cetera, et cetera.
Has this sort of, you know, green mania that has swept many of the companies in not just Hollywood, but you know, all over America. Has it made it being green more in a serious way more difficult?
The only thing I would say about that is that there is still some kind of chaotic energy around being green. You know, some people who have just drank the Kool-Aid don't really know what that means for them, but they want to go green. You know, and there is a rather poor vocabulary around the issues. And so you hear people kind of mixing metaphors and talking about trying
Shelley,
to harness
we want to use tree-friendly chainsaws. You know, like,
exactly.
Do you get memos like that ever?
No.
How important a person are you at Warner Brothers? And by that, I mean, like, how high do you report? Who do you report to? And where is this in the sort of food chain of Warner Brothers management? How seriously do they take the environment?
I think they take it very seriously. I report in through government affairs and have very good access to the COO and our president and the CEO. So they're very engaged and very interested in these issues. The management of the studio itself, the president of the studio, is very engaged and very supportive. So I feel very fortunate. I feel like I'm in a good family. I like my family.
Are there sort of other versions of you at each of the studios? And do you all sort of get on your tandem bikes and eat blue-green algae together to talk about this? I mean, is there a...
Wow, you make it sound like we're just a bunch of nuts.
No, I say that with affection. I mean, you know, you're certainly not driving over in your Escalade to eat red meat. You look very healthy.
I think every studio, depending on its size, it's easy to lump us all into, you know, kind of one big bowl, but we're all very different. We have cultures. And
understood, so but I mean, is there a you at every studio?
Not at every single one, but most have someone who has some responsibility. I think in our case, we've really created a whole program and a division and a budget and staff dedicated solely to this. I think other studios are growing those departments and seeing the pressure and the need to do more. And as you pointed out, they're also getting mandates from their parent companies. And by the way, we do get together and we do share and we like to collaborate. And this is one area where all of us feel like the more people we get on board, the better. So we like to share notes, even though there's kind of a healthy competition of, you know, who has the first green building in the industry. And that would be WB, by the way.
So if Paramount knocks on your door and says, can I borrow a cup of sugar, you don't slam the door in their face.
No, absolutely. I said, would you like some milk to go with that too?
All right. Well, no doubt it's organic. Our guest is Shelley Billick. She's VP of Environmental Initiatives for Warner Brothers Entertainment. Shelley, thanks for being on The Business.
Thank you very much.
And
my
thanks
pleasure.
For saving The Business. And that's The Business. Matt Holzman produced and edited today's program with production assistance from Ray Guarna. Our associate producer is Darby Maloney. You can listen to this or any past program online anytime at kcrw.com/thebusiness. You can also podcast the show on KCRW's site or through iTunes. Our email address is thebusiness@kcrw.org. The Business is produced by KCRW Santa Monica and distributed by National Public Radio. I'm Claude Brodesser-Ackner. We'll see you next week on The Business.